All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to Sri Guru Shigaranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. A reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 20, Pure Devotional Service, Text 27 and 28. Hare Krishna. First, I just heard the news about Bhakti Chris just before about 30 seconds before you all did. And of course, it's certainly somewhat disturbing. And I was thinking that the verse today is actually very appropriate. And I think it gives us a lot to meditate upon when we consider devotees in distress and their distressful condition, and may help us to understand a little more how to deal with these types of situations. It's a very, very well-known, very important verse today. So we will begin. It's two verses that go together. For sake of time, we'll chant the first one responsibly and then just read the others. Okay. So, Jata Shraddha Matkatasu.
Jata Shraddha Matkatasu.
Jata Shraddha Matkatasu. Nirvinna Sarvakarmasu. Veda Dukat Makan Kaman. Paritya Gepya Nishvara. Paritya Gepya Nishvara. Jata Shraddha Matkatasu. Nirvana Sarvakarmasu. Veda Dukat Makan Kaman. Paritya Gepya Nishvara. Jata Shraddha Matkatasu. Nirvana Sarvakarmasu. Veda Dukat Makan Kaman. Paritya Gepya Nishvara. Vaishnavis. Jata Shraddha Matkatasu. Nirvina Sarvakarmasu. Let's read the second verse, 28 together. Tito bajeta mam prita shradalur prita nishchaya sushamanas chitan kaman duko darkam shigar hayan. And word for word, jata, one who has awakened, shraddha, faith, matkatasu, in the descriptions of my glories, nirvana, disgusted, sarva, with all, karmasu, activities, veda, he knows, dukkha, misery, atmakan, constituted of, kaman, all types of sense gratification. Prityage, in the process of renouncing. Api, although. Anishvara, unable. Tata, due to such faith. Bhajeta, he should worship. Mam, me. Prita, remaining happy. Shradhalu, being faithful. Dridha, resolute. Nishchaya, conviction. Jushimana, engaging in. Cha, also. Tan, that. Kaman, sense gratification. Dukkha, misery. Udarkan, leading to. Cha, also. Garhayan, repenting of. Translation purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Having awakened faith in the narrations of my glories, being disgusted with all material activities, knowing that all sense gratification leads to misery, but still being unable to renounce all sense enjoyment, my devotee should remain happy and worship me with great faith and conviction. Even though he is sometimes engaged in sense enjoyment, my devotee knows that all sense gratification leads to a miserable result, and he sincerely repents such activities. Report. The beginning stage of pure devotional service is described here by the Lord. A sincere devotee has practically seen that all material activities lead only to sense gratification, and all sense gratification leads only to misery. Thus, a devotee's sincere desire is to engage 24 hours a day in the loving service of Lord Krishna without any personal motivation. The devotee sincerely desires to be established in his constitutional position as the Lord's eternal servitor, and he prays to the Lord to elevate him to this exalted position. The word anishvara indicates that because of one's past sinful activities and bad habits, one may not immediately be able to completely extinguish the enjoying spirit. The Lord here encourages such a devotee not to be overly depressed or morose, but to remain enthusiastic and go on with his loving service. The word nirvana indicates that a sincere devotee, although somewhat entangled in the remnants of sense gratification, is completely disgusted of the material life and under no circumstances willingly commits sinful activities. In fact, he avoids every kind of materialistic activity. The word kaman basically refers to sex attraction and its byproducts in the form of children, home, and so forth. Within the material world, the sex impulse is so strong that even a sincere candidate in the loving service of the Lord may sometimes be disturbed by sex attraction or by lingering sentiments for wife and children. A pure devotee certainly feels spiritual affection for all living entities, including so-called wife and children, but he knows that material bodily attraction leads to no good, for it simply entangles one and one's so-called relatives in a miserable chain reaction of fruitive activities. The word dhrita nishchaya, steadfast conviction, indicates that in any circumstance, a devotee is completely determined to go on with his prescribed duties for Krishna. Thus he thinks, There's a long quote of how living and his thinking, and this is basically directly taken from Vishwan Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on this verse. By my previous shameful life, my heart is so polluted with many illusory attachments. Personally, I have no power to stop them. Only Lord Krishna within my heart can remove such inauspicious contamination. But whether the Lord removes such attachments immediately or lets me go on being afflicted by them, I will never give up devotional service to him. Even if the Lord places millions of obstacles in my path, and even if because of my offenses I go to hell, I will never for a moment stop serving Lord Krishna. I am not interested in mental speculation or fruitive activities. Even if Lord Brahma personally comes before me and offers such engagements, I will not be even slightly interested. Although I am attached to material things, I can very clearly see that they lead to no good because they simply give me trouble and disturb my devotional service to the Lord. Therefore, I sincerely repent my foolish attachments to so many material things, and I am patiently awaiting Lord Krishna's mercy. The word pritā indicates that a devotee feels exactly like the son or subject of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and is very attached to his relationship with the Lord. Therefore, although sincerely lamenting occasional lapses into sense enjoyment, he never gives up his enthusiasm to serve Lord Krishna. If a devotee becomes too morose or discouraged in devotional service, he may drift into an impersonal consciousness or give up devotional service to the Lord. Therefore, the Lord herein advises that although one should sincerely repent, he should not become chronically depressed. One should understand that because of his past sins, he must occasionally suffer disturbances from the material mind and senses. But one should not therefore become a devotee of detachment, as do the speculative philosophers. Although one may desire detachment to purify one's devotional service to the Lord, if one becomes more concerned with renunciation than acting for the pleasure of Lord Krishna, his misunderstanding the position of loving devotional service. Faith in Lord Krishna is so powerful that in due course of time it will automatically award detachment and perfect knowledge. If one gives up Lord Krishna as the central object of one's worship and concentrates more on knowledge and detachment, one will become deviated from one's progress in going back home, back to Godhead. A sincere devotee of the Lord must be sincerely convinced that simply by the strength of devotional service and the mercy of Lord Krishna, he will achieve everything auspicious in life. One must believe that Lord Krishna is all-merciful and that he is the only real goal of one's life. Such a determined faith combined with sincere desire to give up sense enjoyment will carry one past the obstacles in this world. The words jata shraddha matkatasu are most significant here. By faithful hearing of the mercy and glories of the Lord, one will gradually be freed from all material desire and clearly see at every moment the utter frustration of sense gratification. Chanting the glories of the Lord with firm faith and conviction is a tremendously powerful spiritual process that enables one to give up all material association. There's actually nothing inauspicious in devotional service to the Lord. Occasional difficulties experienced by devotee are due to his previous material activities. On the other hand, the endeavor for some sense gratification is completely inauspicious. The sense gratification and devotional service are directly opposed to each other. In all circumstances, one should therefore remain the Lord's sincere servant, always believing in his mercy. Then one will certainly go back home, back to Godhead. And the verse once again, having awakened faith in the narrations of my glories, being disgusted with all material activities, knowing that all sense gratification leads to misery, but still being unable to renounce all sense enjoyment, my devotee should remain happy and worship me with great faith and conviction. Even though he is sometimes engaged in sense enjoyment, my devotee knows that all sense gratification leads to a miserable result, and he sincerely repents such activity. Om Gyanata Brandasha Gananjana Salakaya Chaksurun Mitamina Tasma Sri Grave Namaha Vanshako Patrubhischa Kripasindu Vyevacha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Hare Krishna. So very, very wonderful verse, and very, very nice purport, a long purport that really explains very thoroughly some of the principles discussed here. I was thinking about, thinking of Satchinanda Swami coming in a couple of days. I went to a Japa retreat that he held in New York about many years ago, 6 or 7, 8 years ago. And it was very nice, and of course, you know, he's very, very deeply, deeply involved in chanting, has deep realization about, you know, our mood of chanting the holy name. And so I thought the seminar was really more geared towards more, not advanced devotees, but, you know, experienced devotees who had been around a while, who were very committed. And of course, there were a lot of very new devotees there also. And so because the discussion was so much about the holy name as being non-different from Krishna and the mood that one should be in, one of those newer devotees, I heard him say later that he really couldn't get in that mood. It was just beyond him. So he decided he should, since he couldn't do it properly, he should quit chanting. So that is an incorrect understanding of the process of bhakti and quite contradictory to what Krishna is instructing us in this verse. But it does happen. And as in the purport, it is described that one should not become overly morose or discouraged if one cannot perform devotional service exactly perfectly, but one should continue with great faith. I found this verse to be a very exceptional verse, one I've appreciated. And somebody said to me yesterday it was their favorite verse. I guess Divyanga said, that's my favorite verse. You know, it is. It's a wonderful verse. And it's an unusual verse. First of all, because Krishna is speaking about not only the mind of his devotee, but of the neophyte devotee, devotees like us. Normally, the Bhagavatam describes great, you know, great souls, pure devotees, eternal associates. Because obviously, you know, we don't want to hear a book filled with, well, there was this devotee, Tamahar, and he struggled a lot, you know. But, you know, he was did his best. And that would not be real interesting. So usually we hear about, you know, exalted devotees, and they become our inspiration. They are our acharyas. But occasionally, not very often, Krishna also speaks about us, our plight, the devotee who is not so advanced. So here, we can understand some very important points. First of all, that in the beginning, one has not pure devotional service, but mixed service. Still with material desire. But there needs to be a proper mood to that service. And that is that one may have material desires, but one has regret for those. In other words, it's okay. You know, I'm in Maya every once in a while. It's not okay. Yes, I'm in Maya occasionally. Yes, I have some material desire, but it's not really all right. So I regret that. And the devotee has firm faith in the process of bhakti that will help us to advance from that condition. And we also learn that we continue bhakti despite all difficulties, knowing that Krishna will protect us and help us. In Vishnath Chakravartakura's purport to this verse, he says, in these two verses, Krishna speaks of the initial state of a person qualified for bhakti. He's disgusted with the result of karma, following Vedic rituals and ordinary life, and is disturbed by seeing the unhappiness it causes. So in other words, first we're hearing the qualification for taking up bhakti. One doesn't have to be a pure devotee, but one has to at least understand the material world. One has to understand one's situation, realize this material life is not really going to cause me happiness. Rather, it is the source of all distress, my identification with the body, with the senses, with the mind. These things are causing unhappiness in this material world. And therefore, I want to turn to my original constitutional position of eternal servant of Krishna. When one has an understanding, he's a devotee. That's kind of how we define what a devotee is. It's not a casual interest. It's kind of interesting. I saw some devotees once. No, I mean, that's good. That's the beginning of one's devotional life, just having some contact with Krishna, his devotees, the holy name. But now we're talking about the jiva who has made some commitment, some understanding, has made that sambandha, that connection. Okay, I get it. This is what I need to do. So we're understanding the position of Krishna, understanding our position of service, and we want to perform devotional service. We want to get out of this material world. We want to go back to Godhead and serve Krishna. Vishwanath says in this position, says the devotee does not have inclination to unfavorable things to the same extent that he has firm determination for bhakti which he has started. Okay? So that's what we have to at least have initially. He's 51% more interested in Krishna than Maya. Okay? That's all that's been asked for. But Krishna's saying, you know, start out with more interested in Krishna and his service than we are in the material world, even though there is attraction still there. So the devotee has faith in the process and more attached to Krishna, even though there are some desires. So that's the starting point. And that's what Krishna is addressing here. You know, so, one has material desires, no problem. Continue with bhakti. A few chapters earlier, Bhagavatam 11, 14, and 18, and 19, Krishna says, my devotee who has not fully conquered desire is not defeated by sense gratification. Devotion to me burns to ashes all the sins committed. And we've discussed this point in the previous two or three verses, and following tomorrow in the next verse, we'll also continue this point of how the process of bhakti, of devotion, can conquer material desire and any sinful activity. So we have discussed that point, we'll continue to discuss that point. So here, we're talking about the stage of sadhana, the beginning point. Now, we know that there are different stages of sadhana, and as we connect with devotees, we have faith, we begin bhajana kriya, the process of hearing and chanting, then we come to anartha nivritti. Hopefully we're all at least situated in the anartha nivritti stage, which means that we are beginning to clear those anarthas, those past bad activities, behaviors, conditioned activities from the past. Now we're beginning to clear those, anartha nivritti, taking away those anarthas. So it's understood that there are those past behaviors and even those past thoughts in our mind. The consciousness has so much contamination from lifetimes in this material world. Therefore, we know that it's not necessarily going to be so easy to immediately come to the point of pure devotional service. And in fact, there are dangers on the path. And Prabhupada described the process of devotional service as being on the razor's edge. It's a common expression. What is a razor's edge? Well, anybody who's ever shaved knows that. So that's why I gave up a razor and went to an electric, because, you know, I'm tired of cutting myself all the time. Because it is. One slip and one cuts oneself. So a slip in devotional service, a slip on the path of bhakti, can easily lead to fall down. Now, why? Because we have a material body. Guess what? We came in this material world through ahankara, through false ego. We acquired this material body and material subtle body, mind, intelligence, and ego. And thus, we are naturally going to be attracted by the material energy. That's the whole nature of being here. Next chapter, 11:24, the Bhagavatam says, simply by material birth, human beings become attached within their minds to personal sense gratification, long duration of life, sense activities, bodily strength, sexual potency, friends, and family. Their minds are thus absorbed in that which defeats their actual self-interest. So in other words, being in this material world, being in this material body, means there's going to be material attraction. Quick story, I think Shamsundar told us on one of the memory tapes, there was a brahmachari who wanted to take sannyas. This was back in London in early days. And I think Shamsundar was the temple president. And he was talking to this brahmachari. He was a nice devotee, very fixed up. He says, but do you have any desire for sense enjoyment? He says, well, you know, I'm not a pure devotee. Well, do you have anything in your heart at all, a single attraction for sex desire? He says, well, maybe a little. But he said, then you can't take sannyas. And it completely discouraged him. So, you know, he went to Prabhupada, and I guess Prabhupada has maybe perhaps suggested that he take sannyas, and he said, no, I can't take sannyas. You know, Shamsundar's pointed out that still has sex desire. Well, long story short, Prabhupada was actually angry at Shamsundar. He tells this story in himself, And he said, why did you discourage him like that? And Prabhupada said, having a material body means sex desire. You can't, it's not that you're 100% pure. You're doing the processes that are purifying you of the desires that are in the heart. So while we're in this material body, even as devotees who are sincere with faith, there can be fall down from those vows. And there were some nice discussions in the last couple of verses about this. I think it was Nagaraj the other day read from Srila Prabhupada's purport to Bhagavad Gita 9:30, Apache Sadharacharo. Even if one commits most abominable activity, because he is situated in devotional service, he's considered to be saintly. Prabhupada talked about conditioned life and constitutional life. Things connected with the material body and material duties are conditional. Things connected with the pure soul's devotional service to the Lord are constitutional, because that's our real position. And Prabhupada said, for a devotee, those should be in parallel, but sometimes they'll be opposed. So sometimes our conditioned life is opposed to our constitutional life, and there can be... Well, can people hear me? I feel like I keep... My microphone, I keep losing. There's nothing we can do about it. It is what it is. Okay. So, maybe, you know what? I'm just going to hold on. I think there's no hope. I'm just going to hold it. Okay. So, we've tried. He's tried everything. All right. We talked about an accidental or temporary fall down, and Nagaraj gave kind of an interesting discussion about what does it mean? How could it be an accident? And what he concluded, which I thought was a good understanding, was it means it's not planned. It's due to inattention or carelessness. And he gave a good example of like a car accident. In other words, you don't plan to have an accident, but you may cause that accident by your speeding, your inattention, being intoxicated, talking on your cell phone or texting while you're driving, which is a big cause of accidents for booze. So even though we didn't mean to have an accident, we did do behaviors which may have led to that, and we were inattentive. So in the same way, if we're inattentive, we're careless, we may slip, there can be a quote-unquote accidental fall down. And Prabhupada also says it's a temporary fall down. In other words, it's not a permanent state. It doesn't mean that I'm getting intoxicated every night and that's a temporary or accidental fall down. I mean, that's basically a fallen condition. It means there's, this is what it says, temporary or accidental action. And then one must be properly situated in devotional service. And we don't misunderstand this verse as a license for fall down. So, we're in the situation, but the important point here in this verse is that the devotee has firm faith in the process. Firm faith that Krishna will relieve distress and will protect us. A devotee once asked me during class or some home program I was doing, he said, well, you've been a devotee many years. And he says, tell me how you've made spiritual advancement. I said, I don't think I've made a lot of spiritual advancement, to be honest with you. But I thought for a moment, something must have happened in 46 years. I said, I think to the degree that I made advancement is only that I think my faith has increased. Many of us find that over the years, and just through experience, through experiencing many, many things in devotional service, that our faith of Krishna's presence and Krishna's helping us and Krishna's protection does increase. I think we can say that with a lot of confidence to new people, to new devotees. Your faith will, if you're properly engaged in Krishna consciousness, your faith will increase. And that means we understand that Krishna really is there in all circumstances. And even if we're in distress, even if we're experiencing some suffering, there's a reason. Krishna is there and Krishna is helping us. So, faith is important. How do we get faith? Well, that could be a whole other class. We could talk about faith. But Jiva Goswami says, in a commentary to something, which I didn't note, it's in the Bhakti Samrita Sindhu, that the association of devotees precedes faith, and then faith strengthens association and allows the practice of bhakti. So it's mutual, it's reciprocal. You know, the association of devotees increases our faith, but we have to have initial faith, shraddha adao, so that we will take the association of devotees. Jiva says, in the beginning, Jiva Goswami, in the beginning, a Tao, by hearing scripture and association of devotees, one attains faith, Shraddha. Shraddha means trust or confidence. And then after faith appears, again association with devotees takes place, sadasanga, for learning how to practice bhakti, Vajra Kriya. And then from the Bhaktisiddhanta, Jiva Goswami says, faith is the sole cause of the qualification to perform devotional service. So it's interesting. Faith is in the beginning, but faith is all the way through to the end. I think it was one of Vishwanath Chakravarti's commentaries. He said that faith is a component through all the stages of bhakti, and it can be. Do you know that quote? Yeah, that one can see the progress or process of devotional service through all the stages in being progressions of successive development of faith. Okay. So what is faith? Prabhupada said, this is in his purport to Bhagavad Gita 241, faith means unflinching trust in something sublime. You know, Prabhupada has a few of these just nuggets. Few, he has many. He's just, this definition like this. Unflinching trust in something sublime. Sublime means lofty, having excellence, awe-inspiring. I just looked it up. And so, it's something beyond the material. Sublime means, above the normal material consciousness. And so that faith means having faith that Krishna will relieve distress. And this is a fact. The Nectar of Devotion describes six results of bhakti, which are immediate relief of distress or the ability to destroy suffering, klesha, awards auspiciousness, disregard for liberation, rarity of attainment, it gives transcendental pleasure, and ability to attract Krishna. So it's described these first two qualities, relief of suffering and all auspiciousness, are there at the stage of sadhana. The other four are there at stages progressively of bhava and prema. But even in the sadhana stage, in the beginning, for us, bhakti will destroy suffering. But some of you think, well, I still experience suffering. Yes, we do. That relief of suffering may take time. But understand that that relief of suffering does take time due to our past activities, our past karma, etc., etc. But it is handled directly and personally by Krishna. So our mood is described in the verse today, and also another very familiar, wonderful verse, some of our second favorite verse, Tatena kampam nu samik shimano bhujana ibatma kritam vipakam ridvagvapur bir vidatam namaste jive tato mukti pade didayavak. Of course, Lord Brahma's famous prayers in the 14th chapter, verse 8, Bhagavatam. Lord Brahma says, my dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. Similar ideas today, I think, but another way of expressing it, another perspective. Very, very nice. Liberation, or we could say devotional service, is the claim of the devotee who is simply faith again, expecting the causeless mercy of the Lord, and suffering patiently reactions of past misdeeds. Now, this is so important. Of course, this was unfortunately Prabhupada didn't get to the 14th chapter, but he did comment on this verse, and in one purport, or one somewhere, Prabhupada said, this statement of Srimad Bhagavatam should be the guide for all devotees. Is that important? This is the guide for all devotees. They have this mood that Lord Brahma expresses, and very similar to mood what Krishna is expressing in today's verse. That having firm faith that Krishna will protect us. And that's what separates us from pure devotional service, is that lack of faith we have in spiritual life, but we still maintain faith in material happiness. Somehow or another, I will still become happy in this material world through material activities. So, again, our faith is built, as Jiva Goswami was saying, by our association with devotees, accepting the spirit, the service to the spiritual master, and faith is nourished by the processes of hearing and chanting. I was, just as an aside, I was very happy to hear the way that this Purushottama month was presented by Prangavena Prabhu and by Mother Mukhya Prabhu. You know, that what we do is we increase devotional service. We don't need to do some strange austerity or, you know, like tie our hands behind our back and eat khichdi, you know, off the ground or something. That's not, people do these things, right? Especially Kartik. Okay, I'm sorry, I don't get it. But what I do get is we increase devotional service. That's auspicious. We increase hearing, we increase chanting. Someone said there was like full house in the Temple of Mangalarti. I was even here, so it's really, really nice to do those things. Okay. So in this material world, even a devotee experiences suffering. And this is a whole other class. In fact, it's a couple seminars that I've done. But so this is going to be the 32nd version, why devotees experience suffering. Even after it says in the Nectar Devotion that Krishna consciousness gives us relief of all suffering. Four basic reasons. One is reaction to past sinful activities. Prabhupada gives the example of you pull the plug on the fan and it's slowly winding down. So we're not committing new karma, but we are experiencing some results of past activities. However, it's never ordinary karma. It's directly given by Krishna. Example I'd like to give is you take a ball and you bounce it against the wall, and you bounce on the wall, and it bounces back to you very automatically. If it's at a certain angle, it's going to come back at a certain angle. That's karma, action and reaction. But if I take that ball and I throw it and somebody catches it and throws it back to me, it may look the same. The balls came back to me, but the other one is personal. A person, in this case Krishna, took the ball and hands it back to me. So although it may look like karma, it may look like suffering, it's not for the devotee. It's personally handled by Krishna. Why? For the second reason. Because Krishna sometimes puts devotees in suffering or difficulty for their good, for their learning, for their simply surrendering to him. So Krishna personally deals that for each of us. Now, for an advanced devotee, sometimes Krishna will cause suffering as part of a lila to glorify that devotee, like Haridas Thakur being whipped in 22? Market, how many? 22. I didn't say 21. 22 marketplaces. Incredible suffering. Why was this pure devotee put into suffering? Lord Chaitanya's lila glorifying Haridas Thakur. Okay. There's a fourth reason, which you're not going to get into, which is a whole other class, and that's offenses, Vaishnava Aparad. That is a reason why sometimes a devotee, even an advanced devotee, may have... Somebody mentioned the other day that the reason... Was it Bharat Maharaj? No, it wasn't him. That had to, because of offense, had to experience... Subari Muni? Shobhi, the one with the fish, right? Because of some offense to devotee, he, even though he was a great yogi, he had to experience that suffering and falling down. The takeaway here is that Krishna will put us into difficulty for our own good. Bhagavatam 11.5.42, one who has thus given up all other engagements, has taken full shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, is very dear to the Lord. If such a surrendered soul accidentally commits some sinful activity, the Supreme Lord, having great power, seated within everyone's heart, immediately takes away the reaction of some sin, of that sin. And, out of time, okay. I've got to edit here as I go. I won't read that. Very nice, some very nice purports by Vishnu Dhakavaita Kaur about the reason devotees are put into stress. I'll just read this one. A devotee understands that happiness and distress he undergoes due to performing bhakti are special mercy from the Lord. It's like a father who sometimes makes his child drink milk, sometimes makes him drink bitter neem juice. In other words, if he's sick, neem juice is medicinal. The devotee accepts whatever happens to him as the arrangement of the Lord acting for his benefit. So here, the father or mother is acting equally for the benefit of the child, in one case giving him some nice milk or sweets, which he enjoys, in the other case giving him bitter neem juice because he needs it because he's sick. But the child might not appreciate that, right, or understand that. how that's for their own good. So we're the same way. Krishna may have me sometimes do things that causes us happiness, and he may do things that we need medicinally. It may feel like distress, just like that bitter neem juice. Okay. But bhakti does give complete relief. Now, interesting. There was discussion about jnana, vairagya, and yoga, and all these other processes. Now, actually, it's in a purport, I think, to a verse coming up. Vishnuchakravarti Thakur says, since the ahankara is destroyed by bhakti alone, jnana and vairagya are not recommended for my devotee because they belong to sattva-guna, whereas bhakti is beyond the gunas. So that's why the process is bhakti. If one is performing jnana, yoga, karma, these other things, these are in the mode of goodness, sattva-guna, and therefore, while they will give some value, they will not completely purify the heart because they're not in the shuddha-sattva platform as is bhakti. Okay? Bhagavatam 3:25-33 says, after the devotee passes to the stage of nishta, ruchi, and ashakti, the ahankara, hridaya granthi, is destroyed. This takes place on its own, not with endeavor of the devotee. Bhakti destroys the subtle body just as digestive fire consumes food. Okay? So through hearing and chanting, we clear the heart of past sinful activities and increase our love of God. So, Krishna will also give us this protection and help even without our asking. And when we talk about protection, we don't always mean from everything in the material world. The material body will not always be protected, as we see daily our experiences with devotees. But Krishna will give us the greatest protection, which is spiritual protection. And he helps us to advance in Krishna consciousness. So, another very nice quote I like very much from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila 22:39. Krishna says, if one engages in my transcendental loving service, but at the same time wants the opulence of material enjoyment, he is very foolish. Indeed, he is like a person who gives up ambrosia to drink poison. Since I am very intelligent, why should I give this fool material prosperity? And instead, I shall induce him to take the nectar of the shelter of my lotus feet and make him forget illusory material enjoyment. Whenever Krishna is requested to fulfill one's desire, he undoubtedly does so, but he does not award anything after being enjoyed which will cause one to petition him again and again to fulfill further desires. When one has other desire, but engages in the Lord's service, Krishna forcibly gives one shelter to his lotus feet, where one will forget all other desires. Okay, so Krishna is working on our behalf, working for our benefit. If we are trying to serve Krishna but have material desires, he will not continue to award those things which will take us away from devotional service. And that's his great mercy to us. So spiritual advancement means understanding, thinking about how Krishna is dealing with us personally. When we find ourselves in these times of distress or times of suffering or times of anxiety, think about, what does this mean? Why is Krishna putting me in this situation? And sometimes we don't know right away. Then we have to have faith that it either will be revealed at some point, or it may not, but Krishna is acting for our good, for our eventual surrender to him. So we always have to ask, what is my lesson? I always find that Krishna works differently with all of us. We all have our own individual lessons. I find when I become a little proud or something, boy, does Krishna slap me real quickly. If I think I'm chanting a verse very nicely, no, I'm very nice chanting. I'll just totally mess up the whole verse and, you know, I can't. It's like my knowledge of Sanskrit has completely vanished. You know, so Krishna works that way. So, okay, I think you're smart. It's all coming from me. Everything's coming from Krishna. And he works with all of us in little ways and large ways to help us. So this is Krishna's greatest kindness, that he helps us to surrender and to advance in Krishna consciousness and our loving devotional service to the Lord. So spiritual advancement means increasing our faith in Krishna, Advancement means learning to surrender to Krishna, and advancement means always depending upon the mercy of Krishna. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. I'm sorry I ran over. I actually had way too much here. Quick questions, comments? Janmashtami Prabhu.
It seems like when we look at the lives of advanced devotees, there's Leela, as you mentioned, but then there's also like Prabhupada, when his wealth was taken away, you know, he reflected, he came across this, the 1088 Yashahamanuganami. So it seems that, and I'm not sure if that was included, I think you had four reasons why we get into distress, but it seems that one of the key factors that Krishna puts devotees in distress for is so they'll take deeper shelter in the holy name. Was that included in that list of four? Because it definitely is a fact.
In other words, my second was that Krishna puts devotees in difficulty for their own good, for their surrender, for their learning. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. One other...
I just didn't have time to really develop that.
What's that?
I didn't have time to really develop that idea, but yeah, you're right. That's a good point. Yeah.
There's the fourth canto, 19th chapter, 34th verse, there's a description in the purport how when things take place according to providential arrangement, and Prabhupada says, the more we try to rectify such reversals, the more we enter into the darkest region of materialistic thought. So it's kind of a natural reflex when there is a reversal, you know, to try and fix it. But I'm just wondering where that, I don't know if you're familiar with that quote or not, but it's interesting because that's normally what people would do, you know, is they would try to turn it around, but there's the precaution that if we do this, then we get absorbed in materialistic thought.
Yeah, because it's not... It's not considering the surrendering process. In other words, you know, we certainly something happens to us. We need to use our intelligence, and we need to respond in certain ways, and certain things we might do naturally. Because it's also described that one needs to keep body and soul together while we're in this material world. We're not just, you know, avadutas or just on it. But it must be done with the attitude that of surrender to Krishna. Krishna, I require your help. You know, in other words, if one simply tries to make a material solution without Krishna, that's the problem. And we tend to do that, you know. But if we always are asking Krishna for his help, please help me, you know, in this situation. And of course, to ask Krishna to help you in distress isn't even really the most advanced stage of devotional service, but it's certainly better than not asking Krishna. Okay, others. Other side. Okay, ladies, last chance. Anything else? Oh, okay. No? All right, back over here. We've got Dharmaraj and Divyanga.
Prabhu, even though, you know, you explained so nicely on this verse today, sometimes there are still, like, missing conceptions for me. And one of that is, like, this understanding that a devotee who is on the path of bhakti, like, knows the right path and still goes to commit sinful activities. It's like almost an impossible for me to conceive, you know, like how that all, you know, takes place.
Then that's because you're a very advanced devotee.
No.
For many of us, it's quite easy to conceive how we could material desires activities. Yeah. No, it's obviously the devotee tries to remain very strict and follow the vows of a spiritual master. And in fact, it's described that of the 10 offenses, the two most serious offenses are one, Vaishnava Aparad, and the second, let's describe Vaishnava Jagrati Thakur in the sixth canto. The other one is committing sinful activity on the strength of chanting. So no, we don't. Those are serious, and in fact, there will be some reaction or suffering caused by that offense if we commit that offense, which is different than maintaining some material attachment. There's those two offenses, right? One is committing sinful activity on the strength of chanting, others maintaining some material attachment. So I think that's a little bit the distinction that you're getting at. We might have some material attachment, which is certainly an offense, but it's rectifiable by the continued chanting of the holy name. But if we deliberately, again, not the accidental fall down, but deliberately commit sinful activity, thinking, well, I can just keep chanting a Christian, do anything I want, then yeah, that's very not good at all. That we certainly should not be in that mentality. Helper, do you want to have more to say? Maybe you have something to say about it.
No, I was just going to say that it's okay to discuss whatever you discuss in class, like to comment on it. So you, part of the class this morning, you know, you commented on that microphone stand. So I'm going to purchase one so that, you know, hopefully, yeah. Sachinanda Maharaj.
Did everyone hear that? Dharma Raj Prabhu is going to get us a new microphone. Howdy, bowl. Okay, so very, very auspicious result in my complaining up here. Thank you. Divyanga, Prabhu.
It worked.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a nice class. I just wanted to say, last night I listened to Pankajungri Prabhu gives a class on the auspicious Purushottam month. It's about an hour. It's out of Chaupati. It's really, really sweet. I recommend listening to that highly. Anybody who's focusing on this month, he really explains it and goes into detail. It's really nice. It was just on YouTube. It's out of childhood.
All right, thank you. Guru Prasad?
Thanks for a wonderful class. Material activities and spiritual activities, you said, are two parallel lines. So the distinction between material activities and spiritual activities is because we're not thinking of Krishna, because lots of the material activities seem like maintaining the body or family. So if you think you're doing it for Krishna, I mean, like I was just thinking, I spent hours in my garden yesterday pulling out weeds, and I think I'm growing these flowers for Krishna. But then I was thinking, I should be reading and chanting a little more than doing this. But I was thinking, I'm doing it for Krishna. So
yeah. I guess to clarify a little bit, when Prabhupada said, he called them constitutional and conditional activities. And he said they should be running parallel. In other words, we do have conditional activities, taking care of our families, et cetera, things that we do while we're in this material world. In other words, they're connected with the particular body we're in this material world. They're not eternal. But nevertheless, they are duties, dharma. And as you, I think you explained it nicely, if they're in parallel, that means we're connecting Krishna with those duties. Like you're pulling weeds thinking, oh, I can relate to that. This is for Krishna. You know, glorifying, you know, Krishna's flowers, offering the flowers to Krishna. Or sometimes we may even think, you know, this is Krishna's home. This is Krishna's prayer. It's not my home. It's not my land. It's Krishna's. And therefore, to keep it up nicely, to make it look nice, you know, even, you know, it's all done for Krishna. When we start thinking it's for myself only and my enjoyment and Krishna's out of the picture, that's when the two tracks are not in parallel. The Prabhupada says in opposition. Yeah. But you've just nicely described the process of Yukta Vairagya. Right? We try to do everything we do, but do it for the service of the Lord. Right? Not that we give up. In fact, this whole thing of renunciation is condemned here. In fact, it says Vairagya is only in the mode of goodness. It's not going to lead us to, you know, true spiritual life. So yes, Yukta Vairagya is giving up everything but accepting those things positive for Krishna. Thank you. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.